Terrific there to hear from Brendan Bolton, of course, over from Tasmania. Of course, he was coaching down there.
North Hobart.
So nice to have him back here in Victoria coaching the Box Hill Hawks. And let's just hope for their sake that they have a win today. They're 10th on the ladder. Currently, we never finished off that ladder, Darren, but they are 10th and the Scorpions are 9th.
Before we jump off, Brendan Bolton, just to put you boys on the spot, who did he replace as interim coach and at what club? Obviously, it was Tasmania, but who did he replace to in 2006?
Oh, was it Bernie? Was that the club?
I heard someone in the background there, maybe be right there.
It was the Devils, was it?
It was Tasmanian.
And
footy
did this coach leave, halfway
Matthew
through
Armstrong,
the year?
I believe, is the word coming from the back.
Yeah, Matthew Armstrong.
Did he leave halfway through the year?
Yeah, the players lost... lost respect for
lost
the coach.
Interest.
Yeah, and what do they say? You know when the coach basically has lost his players.
Yeah. How does that happen, though?
Oh, I don't know.
How do you think that can happen? Is it the way he talks to them, or doesn't he talk to them? Is it his attitude to the game? Is it not his attitude to the game?
Could it be just one particular incident that we don't know about?
Is it something that happened off the field in a pub?
Perhaps something they say in the heat of the moment a few times. They might their temper might boil over or something like that. They might talk to a player in a certain way.
And each case seems to be individual. To take it away from football, there was an interesting case in the Rugby Union Super 14s with the Western Force. They had an incident with their coach, I think his name's John Mitchell, and he lost respect from some of the senior players. Those players have actually now signed contracts and move on from the club. He was actually suspended from coaching. Then he was allowed back to be coach, but didn't have any decisions on who played where. It was a joint board decision. So he's basically been allowed to coach with very rigid guidelines.
You couldn't imagine a club possibly functioning at 100% under that sort of a situation. There's no way, under that arrangement, you're going to get the best out of a side.
I think it comes down to self-preservation sometimes. And obviously, John Mitchell's trying to keep his job, but some coaches, like Matthew Armstrong, could see out the season, but might see it better that he actually leaves his post.
But he wasn't there for a very long time, and that's the most amazing thing about it.
It wouldn't be an easy decision, though, Simon.
No, but you just wonder, does it happen in club or off the field? You never know these things. There's only one person that really knows the answer to that, and that's the person who's left for whatever reason.
Well, I think like a Grant Thomas situation, I think that came from board level. I think that would have been a board decision. And then some would be maybe senior players. Not so much revolting, but saying, putting their hand up and saying, this coach isn't right for us at the moment.
Like, I guess, a Stan Owl situation that's been rumoured in the past. So.
Yeah, and these guys, they are never outside of the football code, though, are they? They'll always remain in it in some way, shape or form, whether it be coaching a local side, coaching a junior side, coaching your son's side, or anything like that, or getting involved in other sorts of media that you were previously involved in.
Well, you played football at a high level, Simon, and I guess it's one thing, it's why you commentate. There's just a certain love you have for the game, and when you step away from the spotlight of a senior coaching role at this level, you know, a bit like a player, they probably feel like they've still got some time to give.
I think love and understanding.
Yeah.
I think they go together, and you could write a song about it. Love and understanding.
But football's a habit.
Jim.
You don't join football to play in the AFL or to play in the VFL. You join AFL or you join football at grassroots level because you love the game.
That's right.
And when you finish at the highest level, you've still got that passion for the game at grassroots level. That's where it all started, and that's football in its purest form.
And that's what I want to talk about. A certain player playing with the Scorpions today, I'm not sure if you boys have seen him, but grassroots footy is where he started, and I saw him playing as an underage kid, and here he is playing senior footy with the Scorpions today. I'll start on the bench. We'll talk about him in a moment, won't we, Jim?
John Norvey had a philosophy. You get the players to be friends with each other. If you're friends off the ground, you'll be absolute friends on the ground too.
That's what it's all about. It's that bonding
and
experience.
And you don't want to let your mates down. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
John Norvey was a very successful coach. He coached at Richmond, Melbourne and the Swans. And every one of those clubs...
Was it the Swans?
Brisbane. But he still lifted those players from...
He was actually coached before Lee Matthews. Yeah.
As Jack Dyer used to say, he used to lift from good ordinary players to very good players.
Yeah, I think what he got out of Melbourne and Richmond in particular was exceptional, given what he had. Yeah.
But sport is so important, I reckon, as a youngster. Playing in a team... bonding with other children your own age, playing basketball, football, cricket, tennis, whatever. It doesn't matter. This is where you form your friendships. Mm. This is where you form your discipline. And this is where, hopefully, you can go on and be a good person at what you do outside of sport and what you do inside of sport. But it's terrific.
But as Darren and yourself would know, Simon, and the reason why you go and play grassroots football is because your friends are already doing it.
Mm.
Or you go down together or you make friends at the football club from your under-9 level. So you've already got that natural instinct of playing together. You know, there's nothing like going back to the grassroots football. But coaching in the VFL has changed. The two coaches we see today, Brendan Bolt and Peter German, are actually part-time assistant coaches at their aligned clubs. So their roles are totally different. Like, we spoke to Jade Rawlings yesterday, the Coburg coach. He spends 7 days a week with his Richmond aligned players and 4 days a week with the Coburg players. That is a lot of time spent with these players now.
Absolutely.
And there's a lot of pressure on the head coach. It was mentioned on Channel 10's broadcast last night just how difficult it can be to actually be a head coach of an AFL side now, because there's no other sport in the world that has 18 players on the field at once.
Do you think that is too much time? Really? Do you think that's too much time spending with seven of one lot, four of another?
I think football's changed now. Does it need to be that intense? It's the mark of perfection they're chasing, and they haven't quite found it yet.
No one will find that.
No one will find it. No, you can't control it. But that's what they're searching for, and I think the more time they spend with players, the better chance they are of finding that that perfect mix. It might not be the perfect game plan, but that mix, that where you can get the best out of your team on game day, because coaches will say to you, we can have all the chats in the world through the week.
Mm.
You can walk into the rooms and know your team's not on, and start a bad day from there. So football's more of a mental game now than just the physical aspects of it. They're athletes playing a game that's not natural to them. Too many players are being recruited who haven't spent enough time playing football.
Then you get some players, like different players are different. Of course, you've got a list of 38, 40 or whatever it is, and every individual is unique and different. You get some players who, I guess, need to be nurtured a lot. They need to be constantly instructed, constant reinforcement. And you need a lot of players who often need to be left to their own devices. Sort of, you give me my instructions, you take me for training, but basically leave me be for the rest of that time. So it's hard also striking that balance between each individual personality that you've got to deal with.
And that's what I find the interchange most frustrating, is because they can be on the ground for 2 or 3 minutes and then back off again, and they're on and off and on and off. Now, surely you cannot get comfortable in a game of football being dragged all the time.
Having played only at minor level, I always thought it was a massive disruption to your momentum, and just to even getting a feel for the game, sort of coming on, getting used to the pace, it's not ideal.
The Jack Watts we see here this afternoon, the first time we've broadcast Jack Watts playing senior VFL football, will not be the same Jack Watts that we're talking about in 3 years' time.
You don't think
absolutely.
So?
Absolutely. No. But, yeah, he's still got a lot. I mean, he's got all the attributes of a star, but you've still got that nurture and development aspect to come through.
He may not go on.
Oh, exactly right. Exactly.
He may not. No.
Yeah.
But
there's that fine line, whether you do, whether you don't.
I reckon he'll go on to be a very, very good player.
But this is an important transition for him between...
It is. Yeah. Now, is this game, by these coaches being overanalyzed, too much spending, too much time with them, in their heads about just a game of football? Is it too over the top?
The pressure on young players today is greater than it ever has been before. I mean, the system, I guess, doesn't allow you to develop for as long as you used
to. But younger players are getting opportunities faster than
they
are.
Yeah.
And I think that's gone down to the fact that in Victorian football, or in the AFL, there's no reserve grade competition.
No.
Like Michael Tuck, didn't he have 70 games of VFL reserves?
And even,
even
under-19s linked
level
to a club. So it was under-19s, then reserves, then...
Well, I think the under-18 comp's fine.
Yeah.
But it's when those players are like... I mean, the VFL's great for this, and the alignments are strong, but you think that some of the players are probably getting an opportunity faster than what they would if this competition and the Sandfall and the Waffle were stronger. Some players are actually finding their experience by being on the ground in AFL level. Melbourne's a big example of that with so many debutants this year.
Definitely.
It's a bit of a find your feet or fail. And if you fail, you come back to the VFL to learn a little bit more. But if you can stand up to the pressures and the rigours of playing at the highest level in the land, well, you kind of stay up.
And
it's a sink or float sort of situation.
And I think that stands both of those clubs in good stead. In Casey, when they come back with that extra experience and also getting that exposure at AFL level, Melbourne aren't getting blown away, so it's good for their confidence. well, they're staying in touch, but also making them better footballers when they do come back. So.
Well, for the thing, Casey had 125 kids or players come through their training plan over the Christmas break. Definitely goes to show that a lot of kids are here because they think they can play AFL.
Now, you mentioned the word pressure. It's got to be pressure both mentally and physically with these young guys coming through. Obviously not strong enough really to handle at the moment and strong enough in the mind to handle it as well. So you've got to be strong at both ends, don't you?
Yeah, like handling even dropping a player, like telling an 18-year-old that he's been dropped even from the VFL back to the twos like Pierce Liddell, that sort of thing. And, I mean, it's that balance as well. Like, you look at Jack Watts. I mean, he's got all of the attributes you would think mentally in terms of skill, but he's still got, I guess, the body of a teenager. So there's that development as well. You've got to be careful not exposing them to too much pressure too early on.
And the other thing with the advantage of this competition is that these guys are having an opportunity at this level, which isn't the greatest level because the AFL is, to play with players that have been playing AFL who have dropped back for form reasons, to actually get some guidance out in a game like this to help them with their experience. Not so much their physical attributes, but more their mental way of how to prepare for a game before they actually run out on the ground. And while they're out there playing, how they actually go about it by watching others.
And that's where you want a strong alignment. That's where you want strong interaction between the clubs. Melbourne have been very good at that with Sandringham and now with Casey. So,
and now with St Kilda with Sandringham, you're seeing the same sort of flow-on effect as well.
And Williamstown with the Bulldogs is a good strong alignment as well. So,
and the North Bulleans Carlton one's obviously starting to work, because we remember a couple of years ago that was going to fizzle out to nothing. And the Bulleans were taken aback by that. They thought their club was gone. Because they thought Carlton were going to just go out through the back door and say, bye-bye, we're going to go into this competition as Carlton.
And Werribee as well. Like Werribee with the Western Bulldogs, they weren't all that happy. We've had the president voice that a couple of times with the strength of that alignment, but they're going very, very well with the Kangaroos now. So
it takes a while to form, doesn't it? Surely, because you've got players from all over the place just forming. And you've got top-up players as well.
And both clubs need to understand, I guess, the way they see it. The AFL club needs to understand what the alignment's there for on the other side of the coin, not just what they can get out of it as a club.
We spoke about this a little bit with Jade Rawlings yesterday, and he's saying that, one of the most interesting things I picked up out of the interview was Richmond are playing for Coburg.
Yeah.
He's told his Coburg-listed players that they must come and introduce themselves to you guys.
Okay.
They're coming to pull on your jumper.
Yeah.
Don't be overawed by the people you're playing with, because it's up to them to actually come and speak to you about it. So. I thought that was pretty interesting and a pretty strong stance to make sure they keep the Coburg spirit alive and
that
tradition.
They're wearing that jumper.
Exactly.
And they've got supporters out there who've gone to the Coburg football ground at City Oval there for years and years and years and years to watch that jumper go around. It doesn't matter who's playing in that jumper anymore, but it is the pride and the respect of the jumper that's being worn that they want the supporter base there. They just don't want the Richmond supporters there. They want the Coburg supporters back. And if they can get that going, and every club can do that, we don't see Sandringham, Coburg, Frankston, Port Melbourne, we don't see them wearing different jumpers. They still wear their same jumpers.
Yep.
The Box Hill Hawks as well. So that's most important, that you try to keep that alive as you possibly can. And with Rawlings doing that, that's a good way of doing it.
Yeah, no, definitely.
And by letting the supporters know that that's the way he's going about it is even better, because then they know they can go to the game and support Coburg, support the jumper, because that's what you're doing. Mm. You're supporting that jumper.
Well, that's what you're playing for, isn't it? That's who you're representing. And it was a little bit of the Coburg spirit yesterday when they came back in that second half to defeat the Pies. And it was a pretty... We've seen some great football in 2009. Phil gave me a pretty disappointing result in terms of a spectacle that he saw in the ABC game, which he watched this morning. So that was two games of... pretty disappointing football yesterday. The standard was terrible. Coburg was looking to go backwards all the time and couldn't even link hand passes. So,
but you look at, I guess, players copping it. I mean, having pride in the jumper when they do go back to that level. Like with Coburg, he had Jack Rewald. A lot of people thought he was unlucky to get dropped, but he just went straight back to to VFL level playing for Coburg, just grabbed the bull by the horns, took 13 contested marks, took pride in the jumper, was busting
that's right.
his gut to get to every contest.
That's exactly right, because there's a lot of people out there looking at what you're doing, not what's going on around you, but what you're doing, what you're focused on.
Yeah.
And you've got to be focused on one thing, and that's improving yourself and getting back to where you think you should be.
Yeah.
And then staying there, and that's the hardest thing of all.
Now, boys, we've got our first text for the day.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be Sunday afternoon football without loyal Liz from Hallam sending us a message. She's doing some chores at home today, so she's up off the couch and doing
Excellent, Liz.
Wants you to say hi to her, Simon.
Yes, Liz, I hope you're having a great day. It's a nice day outside. Maybe you should go out and bend the back and get in the garden and maybe pull a few weeds out there and... tidy up the backyard might be a good idea.
Now, Phil Pearce is very disappointed with you, Liz. You send messages for everybody apart from him. He's feeling a little bit left out. He thought that he was a natural pin-up boy of our broadcast and never gets a mention in Liz's SMSs. But if you want to join the circus, make sure you send us. I know the number, Simon. It's my old one. I shouldn't forget that. It's 0424-438-415. I'm just waiting for the day we get a message from somebody we shouldn't.
Well, that's what I'm waiting for. That will be worth reading, Kane. Don't worry about that. That will be worth reading.
0424-438-415 is our number. We're on till 2 o'clock here this afternoon. I've already had both our guests on. We've had a quick chat to Andrew name?
Andrew Lacko.
And Box Hill coach Brendan Bolton. Phil Pearce, still down at ground level. He's not looking at me now. He was just 2 minutes ago. Phil! We'll cross down to you for your ground report.
No, he hasn't got
one yet.
Well,
he's not ready yet.
The ground report is it's in very, very good order, so we've got no worries with the ground. Now, just getting back to finish this ladder off, the top team is Williamstown, Northern Bullants are second, Port Melbourne after yesterday are third, North Ballarat go up to four and Collingwood are in five, Coburg go up to six, Sandringham in seven, and Werribee 8. So Sandy playing Werribee today. Casey playing Box Hill today. Casey 9, Box Hill 10. That can turn around after today. Geelong 11, Frankston 12, and the Bendigo Bombers 13. And Pontiadley leading the way with 20 goals.
So given that one of Sandringham or Werribee will lose, unless there's a draw, but even that counts, the winner of this game will move into the top 8. So a lot to play for these two sides, just as there is out there with Sandringham taking on Werribee. But some big movers this year, obviously, not just the Northern Bullants, but Collingwood as well, and Box Hill if they can move into the top 8. But just, I heard you mention Frankston as I was walking in. They've been quite unlucky. If you look at the six teams they've played the likes of Port Melbourne, Williamstown, the Northern Bullants, unimproved Casey, Sandringham, these sorts of teams. So they haven't been in terrible form, but they've been playing against quality opposition.
That's six losses now for Frankston.
And I know it's not acceptable.
There's only 13 teams in the comp, which means they're 12.
That's right.
It's halfway through, so... when do we stop going, they're playing against someone ordinary when they play Bendigo?
That's not acceptable.
Yeah, I know.
When they play Bendigo, we'll give them a chance.
Well, you never know. They might
be off
that day.
Yeah, in regards to that sort of form, in that sort of form, they would have beaten a lot of sides. I know they had opportunities. They probably should have beaten Williamstown last week, and they had their chances yesterday too.
Yes.
So,
unlucky.
You've got to take the chances.
Before we give our tips for the games today, there's a couple of tipsters in the VFL footy record that have got a clean sweep so far in round 6. Phil Cleary's got 4 out of 4 so far. Lady Luck has got 4 out of 4 so far. Chris Mitchell, 4 out of 4. And leading the way is Phil Cleary on 24 and Brent Diamond, a new face in the VFL footy record. And Jim Hines also got 4. But Jim, you're nowhere to be seen. We tried to get you in the footy record a few years ago, but that never worked. So Brent Diamond is on 24, leading with Phil Cleary on 24. Reading the footy record, first front page today, bringing up the new TV show on Channel 9 after the Sunday footy show regarding the TAC Cup. Siren goes here to end the reserve grade game. 23-14-152, the Box Hill Hawks have annihilated the Casey Scorpions 12-6-78. Big win there, the Hawks, in the reserves grade game. Talking about the under-18 football, brand new show started last week, second running this week.
It's on now.
That's right, it is. About the under-18s, and they're looking at it being a future stars sort of program where you can pick up the players coming through and building up to the grand finals on AFL Grand Final Eve.
We actually got to see the TAC Cup yesterday. That was a curtain raiser for
okay.
us.
Okay, yeah. Who was it?
We saw the Calder Cannons versus Geelong Falcons.
Okay.
And the Cannons won quite comprehensively in the end.
They did.
Yeah. Perennially strong side at that level, the Calder Cannons. Yeah, made something like 11 or 12 grand final.
Have been for years.
You mentioned that show. You didn't quite... finish it off there, because the producer of that show is our own Tristan Fernandez.
Well, that's your job, you know, more about that than what I do, but I just think that it's about time that someone actually covered that competition in more detail.
Well, I guess the sad thing about it is it had to be paid for by the TAC.
Yeah.
That was all initiated by them, so congratulations to those guys, and Tristan and Hutchie and Angela Pippos and everybody else contributing to that show. It is on now, so flip over to Channel 9, make sure you turn it down and leave it on 97.7 FM, or if you are, at home or on the internet at 3ser.org.au, or there's a couple of other outlets out there, like VFLfooty.com, the independent VFL website. You can find our direct link from there, so we say hello to everybody from VFL Footy, and we'll get Jim posting on a couple of the other internet-based service, so we'll make sure the message does get out there this afternoon. A big win by the Box Hill Reserves, though, here this afternoon.
Huge win. Now, before I leave you guys to preview the game, before I have a look at what's going out on the ground, a couple of things I'd just like to bring up quickly. I noticed there's some synthetic grass around the boundary line here between both interchanges and both benches for where the interchange players sit. Could that be a very big thing of the future, seeing football played on synthetic turf, especially in the country areas where they are being ravaged by drought? Could that be the answer to keeping football alive in the bush?
I think so. It's not an issue that we expect to go away with all of these ravaged clubs. You hear of clubs folding every summer.
Yeah.
So,
is that a good thing? I know it would be very expensive to lay. Mm. I understand that. You'd think the council would have something to do with that, or the Shire, wherever they... The football club is based, but do you
even
think...
Even some, yeah, government grants as well.
Yes,
yeah.
Do you think that that is what we could be seeing? We see it in hockey now. You see it in gridiron over in America. They play on some
soccer
sort of...
Soccer in some cases
soccer.
Too.
Yeah, so is that something that could come here? And if it does, will the players have to wear any special sort of gear on elbows and knees to stop themselves from burning, hitting the grass?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if it's something you can tinker with, the actual surface itself, like a synthetic turf that's, I guess, a little bit easier on you when you fall over and that sort of thing. But, yeah, it's certainly probably the way of the future in my mind.
And to walk on that, and it just covers both interchange areas and benches here. Mm. It is very, very kind on the foot,
yeah.
And it's quite kind on the hand as you actually go down to touch it.
Yeah, I think you weigh it out between, I guess, the odd greys falling across that to, say, falling on a rock-hard surface that doesn't have grass and things like that. So I think most people would substitute one for the other.
Well, Phil Pearce is down there at ground level, and there's also, you're talking about the surface here at Casey Fields, there's just three areas that just concern me, the two goal squares and the centre square.
Yes, and they're very, very soft.
Okay.
And the goal squares, I went and had a walk as I normally do, the goal squares, shaved area sort of comes out a fair way. It's very, very soft in there.
You're like one of those track readers, aren't you? You just like to go
read
the grass
like
and try and find the best spot. Is it the rails or the middle?
I'd like to see which way the wind's blowing and how comfortable this ground. This would probably have to be the best ground in the competition.
I think so.
That I've ever walked on.
Now
it is just like you could play golf off that grass out there.
Casey Scorpions are on. Casey Fields checking out these conditions where you were, Simon.
Yeah.
Look, walking past some of the leftovers you've left on the ground out there after you were out there at halftime of the resis.
I don't make much of an impact on the turf, as you would well know, and there's hardly any impact on this ground anyway after that game we've just witnessed.
Box Hill are yet to make their way out onto the ground. You would think that Box Hill, who haven't won here yet in their time since the inception of Casey Fields, which I think, Jim, you'll correct me, was 2006. I think this is the third season of Casey Fields, so...
And it's getting better every year they play here. Now,
you think they'll take the opportunity to come out and familiarise themselves with the conditions here at Casey Fields?
Well, the Hawks have been over in the other football ground across to the right of us, up further down south, and they've been warming up over there. Now, number 46 for the Casey Scorpions today here, Darren. His name's James Strauss. And... He used to, well, he did
play... He's generating some interest from you, Simon.
Well, his dad owes me money, for a start. But apart from that,
if you're listening, James.
Don't hold that against him.
No, look, I'm not that harsh. But he played with Canterbury.
And the Oakley Chargers and the TAC.
Yes,
as well,
and he also played, he went to Scotch College, and he played with Canterbury as a junior, and I used to actually go out to their finals and do their videos for them out there. Neil Barham even had his son playing out there as well with Canterbury. And it's just great to see that James has made his way through. He looked then that he would make the grade. He even looked last year playing with Scotch College against Melbourne Grammar that he had the necessity, the right equipment to play this game of footy. And
it was a high draft pick. It was Melbourne's third pick last year behind Jack Watts and also Sam Bleach.
Was it about 30 or
something? I think he went a little bit higher than that. I think he was also an under-18 Vic Metro player was James Strauss.
He's a very, very good footballer, and I'll be interested to see how he goes here today after seeing him playing underage football and with Scotch College in the school grade games last year.
Now, so this is his first game, yeah?
I don't know, actually. I don't know if this is his first game today or not, but he's starting on interchange.
It might be.
Now, we're about 15 minutes from the start of the game, and you'd say it's a pretty disappointing crowd.
Yeah, there's not many rumblings here at the moment. The ground.
We've seen some really, really good crowds in the since the start of season 2009. But here this afternoon, it's a little bit disappointing. Sunday afternoon, there wouldn't be too much local football going around. And Phil Pearce is waving at me like a man.
Feverishly.
He is, isn't he? He's nearly ready to go. Do you reckon we should just hold on to him just for a bit?
Yeah,
Let him hang. So just a reserve grade score here, in case you missed it, was Box Hill, 23-14-152. Casey Scorpions, 12-6-78. After a weekend of some massive scores in the reserves. Do you reckon he's ready now, Simon?
Yeah, go for it.
We'll cross down to Phil Pearce at ground level.
Yeah, thanks very much, Kane. Look, I can tell you guys the ground conditions are absolutely superb today. There's a lot of cloud cover, but I've just been told there's a bit of a breeze going across the ground here, guys, and it's not really favouring either end. So I suppose looking from everyone's respective that you can kick goals either way. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the start. I was hearing from outside the Scorpions room, and I tell you what, it is very noisy. It's very loud, and they're really bouncing around, and hopefully they'll be getting on with the business. On the other hand, very tense, very quiet in the Box Hill room. So what are we seeing at the moment? We don't know what's actually going to happen at the start. So as Andrew Lacko said, he's hoping they're in for a pretty tough game today because they reckon the Box Hill Hawks are going to come out pretty hard. So, guys, I'll hand it back to you, and when I give you a wave, we'll be ready for the toss of the coin. So back to you, Kane.
The umpires are the first people on the ground here at Casey Fields. We might leave Simon to...
yeah, you can leave me alone for a little while now. You boys get into the preview.
To start preparing. Now, if you hear nuttering and muttering in the background, it's Simon going through the names as he does. He has been heard. Maybe one of them mute him if that comes through. But Jim Hines is also joining us in the special comments position this afternoon, so we'll get him involved, who celebrated his 50th birthday last weekend, listeners, and he's made it back here this afternoon. Well, Darren, we've seen the Casey Scorpions a couple of times already in season 2009. Haven't seen the Box Hill Hawks yet. We're obviously relying on just filtered back information, but they've got some interesting players there and a good mix of some experienced players coming back from the Hawthorn side who's left and not injured in Renoff, and also Bo Mustin, who's returning from injury as well. So Sam Oles was a big recruit in the off-season. Markovic is now one of their leading defenders. So we'll go through these two games. We'll get your thoughts on how you think this is going to actually shape up. The Casey Scorpions, we'll start with them. And going through their list, I was having a look at their reserve team, and they had an extended bench listed in the paper, but no one's made it through. Well, Glenn Chivers, Jared Matheson, Pierce Liddell and Josh Bolton are the players that will miss out here this afternoon. So that makes it a little bit more room for some of those Melbourne-listed players.
Yeah, I think a couple of the interesting outs, so Pierce Liddell as well, given that they've lost Adam Marriage up to the Melbourne side, I just thought, given the expected conditions, to take away a lot of their crumbing strength inside 50 was an interesting choice for them, as well as
Liam Jarrah.
I was just saying that I probably wouldn't have dropped both of the crummers, Liddell and Jarrah, given that Adam Marich has gone up to the Melbourne side as well. So they probably just lose a little bit of crumbing strength there, but they get some Melbourne-listed players.
You say that, but then you look at two players that are actually listed here for the Casey Scorpions. One's back from the AFL. Spending his second, I think, game for the Casey Scorpions is Neville Jenner. he's definitely that small, crumbing type midfielder. And Rowan Bale, expect to see him have some sort of impact this afternoon for the Casey Scorpions. He's actually made the progression up from the reserves, which says to me that maybe the Casey Scorpions, although the result here wouldn't reflect it, they have a strong reserve grade side. Some of those guys are putting pressure on some of the other players, and sometimes it can be just a mixture of two. Sometimes players come back to the reserves to get a bit extra time in their legs, and Rowan Bale's been doing enough to really push forward to keep that senior berth. So Newton also being in the forward line will definitely add some support there to Jack Watts, who we saw one time in the reserve grade competition actually spend some time playing at centre-half back.
Yeah, which is a good move for him. It was against the Breeze. Good way for him to get, I guess, to read the play and get himself involved by floating across half-back and picking up a lot of touches. But, yeah, you're right about the talent in the side, but very, very young and very, very raw. The Casey Scorpions at both levels, a lot of young players from their feeder club, Gippsland Power. Of course, Melbourne's core list is young as well, and the Casey Scorpions themselves for the last couple of years have been a very young list. So they're not, I mean, in the twos, they've got a talented line up there, but I mean, it's just going to take a little while for that all to come together. They're getting filtered into the senior side now, and it's having benefits. Their last 2 weeks, their confidence has soared after that belting that they received from Sandringham. But yeah, Rowan Bale, we saw him probably 3 weeks ago now against Port Melbourne. He was solid on that night in their narrow defeat. They could quite easily have got up and won that game, but yeah, it's just they're very much a confident side. So I think with their tails up a little bit, I'm leaning towards them this afternoon.
Well, there's 11 AFL listed players for the Casey Scorpions, which does include some of their rookie listed players, and the Box Hill Hawks have 9. Some of their bigger names there being Josh Kennedy, the first round draft pick Sean Makers, who we've seen at AFL level, and also Brett Renoff, who will have an interesting battle against Mark Jamer, who's returning to the Casey Scorpions senior lineup from injury. So Tim Moore's been shouldering a lot of the duties for the Casey Scorpions since they've been down. Jake Spencer was playing in the reserves today, Darren, so big opportunity for Tim Moore to really get some more experience here at senior level.
Yeah, especially last week they were beaten badly in the ruck, the Box Hill Hawks. Renoff in the side today, a very big job for him. It actually led to, his name eludes me, the Collingwood player, Cameron Wood, I think his name is, getting a call up last week. He dominated the ruck against the Box Hill Hawks, constantly fed their on ballers. A little bit less experience in the ruck stocks for Casey, so that battle, I guess, becomes a little bit more even. Renoff has played in a premiership at AFL level, so his experience might be telling there.
One name for any Hawthorn supporters who might be tuning into the broadcast this afternoon, Xavier Ellis. Didn't make it into the final 22 here this afternoon. He's returning from injury, so he'll be spending probably one more week on the sidelines. One player, Simon, who you will spend a lot of time calling this afternoon for the Box Hill Hawks, will be Marco Ballo. Now, he was playing in the VFL back in, I think, 96, 97, maybe 98 for the Box Hill Hawks. Back then, they were the Mustangs, and recruited from Central Districts. Very successful footballer, and has really been dominating for the Box Hill Hawks through their midfield. They've got Stephen Kenner, Sam Iles, and also Adam Uze. Uze returning from injury, playing against his old mob.
Coin came whenever you're ready, mate.
All right, Phil's giving us a wave there. Cole Matthews is making his way, and he didn't even look at me, Phil. He's ready to go.
Tails is a call. Tails it is. Stevie Kenner's won a toss. They're kicking to the turret and in. Back to you, guys.
So Phil Pearce down there telling us one of the umpires today. We'll get the rest of them, Simon, I'm sure. Which is, who do you say, the I'll have to wait for those guys all to turn around. One is number 21, which is Richard Mills, the player that, the umpire that Phil mentioned. Number 10 as well, Troy McCarthy, who actually complimented us on our broadcast yesterday, so we thank him for that. We better be kind for some of the boys here, because we didn't realise the boys in Orange will be listening into us, Simon. They can quite often come under the ridicule of some of our comments, so we'll make sure we're kind to the men in Orange.
Here, Kane. That's something I try not to even focus on of them out there. They've got a job to do, just like we've got a job to do here. That is provide a broadcast of a game of football, regardless of what's going on with them.
But sometimes they do come under the microscope of a caller if there's, you know, having an influence when they shouldn't be, or they've, you know, had a disappointing call. We're well in our rights as commentators to judge them as we do a player. But you are right. We have to be careful of what we say, because we're not here to to bag any bloke and lots of people, but we've got to be fair about it. We are, I know, obviously on community radio and people aren't tuning in to listen to our opinions. Yeah. They want to listen to the football. But
yeah, to be perfectly honest, I've never really gone on about them too much. I just don't see them out there. I don't know who they are. I wouldn't know who they are anyway. I just look at the game that's going on, and if it stops and starts, it stops and starts. There's nothing you can do about it. They've got a job to do. We've got a job to do, and that's what we do.